This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
We have Regan Deering in the studios with us here today and back with us. You know, I look at polling and national polling, and I was looking at a recent poll about what Americans are most concerned with. And I think that there are some overall patterns, and then there's probably regional patterns, and then there's probably very individual patterns depending on the blueness or the redness of your state, or the blueness or the redness of the county, or in your case, multiple counties, and people in Champaign are going to maybe be different than people in Decatur. How do you figure out what you think is important to the voters?
Well, I think you're right. The key to this race is really meeting the voters and hearing directly from them. You know, being a Decatur person, I know getting into this race, it was those kinds of conversations that sort of motivated me to say, hey, I don't like what's happening. You know, this kinds of issues are coming to the forefront. So we have an open seat here. Unfortunately, you know, Rodney is running against Mary and a well gerrymandered district to cut him out. But it's really those retail politics, like you said. I mean, part of campaigning, you know, as much as polls, I'm not sure what your frontline issues are, but, you know,
far and away is inflation and increasing cost. As, you know, a little different Republican, Democrat, but overall, I mean, if you can see the dots, I mean, it's far and away. Mm-hmm. Because it to me is a touch point, you know, that people are hitting several times a day in their life. They're filling up the gas tank, they're going to the grocery store, they're paying their power bill. I mean, you know,
all of the above.
Period. Mm-hmm. So, and it is also a very fair thing. I mean, you know, there's a lot of reasons why we are where we are today with inflation and the economy, but it is what is important to people. Because at the end of the day, I still think people, you know, vote their wallet and it, you know, an old, very old fashioned phrase would have been their pocketbook years ago. Yeah. But I think that is universal because people are seeing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And across the district, I mean, it's infecting, you know, healthy people all the way down to people on welfare. I mean, you may be able to pay your power bill, but you don't have to like it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to feel good because you're stretching something else that you would, you know, be spending your hard earned dollars on. So, you know, we've got people facing that issue. It is top of mind, whether you're talking to a small business owner. I mean, we had a baker down in Macoupin County who was talking about, you know, I sell baked goods. I can go from $2.50 to $3, but I can't go to $4 to cover my shortening cost. That's up 72%. And I mean, he was practically shouting at me. I felt terrible. I said, I can't do anything for you today, but I can hear you and I can feel your pain. And I can know we've got to try and make better policy and better legislation and better trade deals and those kinds of things once I get to Congress. But you're right. It is top of mind and people are really frustrated. And I think that, you know, relationships that are key to this race. I mean, being from this area myself, you know, I have the ability to pick up the phone and call people that can give me, you know, what's going on in their community. I love that, you know, you think about, okay, finding Nicole at the EDC, what's going on here? What are you finding out locally? I got a chance to go to ADM earlier this month. You know, their costs are going up. Their transportation issues are front of mind. I mean, it's being able to hear those things and then say, okay, what are you going to do about it when you get to Washington, which is always the million-dollar question. But, you know, you've got to be able to get time in front of people that are key stakeholders, our voters, and that's really the key to this race for me.
All right. How big a role will Roe v. Wade, you know, pro-life, pro-choice, how big a role will that play in this election cycle?
Well, we knew the ruling was going to come out this summer. You know, the league has fired up.
Many people thought, though, that it would be post, you know, primary election.
Yeah, June. I think it was sort of slated for June. So, you know, it wasn't news necessarily that the decision was coming down. Even the leak, you know, was indicative of prior positions. You know, I think the Democrats maybe are overplaying their hyper dialogue about the leak and how, you know, they're coming for our choices and our bodies, et cetera. You know, those on the pro-life side are just as fired up and motivated to go to the polls as well, too. So I think it's going to play a factor.
All right,
it's kind of at its peak right now as far as top of mind and discussion.
I guess I feel like if you talk about just the economy, if you talk about inflation, you talk about increasing costs, Republicans can win that battle every day over Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the Roe v. Wade leak galvanized Democrats. I don't know what it will mean on election day, but it certainly galvanized a lot of people.
Now, you're clearly, hundreds of marches and everything. Yeah. And the Democrats organize well, if nothing else. They're all in and they're all on the same, messaging and mission. But
you are pro-life.
I am.
With the exception of
rape, incest.
Okay. Because that's a clear, I think I've watched some stuff tumble out of particularly guys' mouths, over the last couple months. I'm like, I don't know what world you live on. I mean, I really don't. Mm-hmm. How do you stack up the Republic or some Republicans? I don't know that it's necessarily just a red issue, but the idea that when you say, not you, but in general, when they say, okay, we don't want mandates for vaccinations, we don't want to wear masks, but we want to tell you, you can't get an abortion. Do you see any hypocrisy in the Republican logic of this thing?
Well,
the government needs to stay out of our decision making. I mean, that's, sure. I hear that from Darren Bailey every day.
Sure. And I think the government staying out in terms of Roe v. Wade is, in fact, putting the control back into the state's hands, which is where it belongs constitutionally. I mean, in my opinion.
Okay, well, then the state, J.B. Pritzker puts a mask mandate in, or J.B. Pritzker says that we're going to shut down schools.
Well, but
and Republicans go,
no. Should have done that through the legislation.
But the legislation was nowhere to be found.
Well, shame on them. If JB is almighty, then he should have called a special session on legislation and said,
what would they have done?
He knew he wouldn't get the votes.
Oh, I'm not so sure. First of all, the people who are against him are in a super minority. The Dan Calkins of the world can't get anything done in Springfield.
Those people had to go back to their constituents and defend their decision, and that's a lot of small business
owners. All right, so when does the government decide what you do in your life and when do they not? I mean, how do you, Regan Deering, separate that?
Well, I do think we need a lot less government interference on every level. To point out the hypocrisy, you're right, it does happen on both sides. And we're in such an age of just blasting out one or two lines that we do get lost in that conversation.
Life's way more nuanced than what most political campaigns give you.
1,000%. And the media, present company excluded.
The media deserves it. Listen, everybody deserves the blame. Number two on this list, by the way, right after inflation and increasing cost, is political polarization. Mm. People are tired, I think. There's a lot of people. I talk to somebody, with the MAGA hat on, or I talk to somebody who's so far progressive over here about defund the police, and I don't feel like either one of those camps necessarily integrate into what most people are doing in their lives every day.
I agree with you 100%. And I think that if we could all turn off our televisions and start talking to our neighbors and have these conversations.
Yeah, but this is what we're getting fed by the people running for office. I mean, you hear the ads, you see the stuff arriving in your mailbox, the stuff you're getting served digitally. None of it's nuanced. There's not one thing. They treat us like we're 10-year-old kids.
It is really bad copy sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of Mike Madigan, and I never was. But
he's entered the race
I'm not a fan of Darren Bailey, but Darren Bailey isn't Mike Madigan.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. I mean, the idea that we've lost the ability to have some civic discourse. I mean, even as a Republican candidate, people are not going to agree with everything that I hold true and are my values. And, but it's my vote that's going to go, down as my head on the pillow at night. So I know what I believe, but I also do know I am having those conversations. I mean, we're going and talking to people that aren't a typical Republican or a typical Democrat. A lot less people are interested in what your party affiliation is. And I hate to hear things as simple as, can you just do the right thing?
Yeah.
Can you just make a common sense decision for what's best in our communities? I mean, that the fact that we have gotten so far away from that, to your point, I mean, I asked before I went to Washington, I called a number of incumbents, whether that's, Rodney Davis, Darren LaHood, Mike Boston, said, hey, is it as swampy as it looks from out here?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to go there and hate it. I would rather go and make progress. I think we have seen a lot of that division. We have both parties screaming into the teleprompters. I got asked about a Democrat that I'd admire and et cetera. And, I thought about in Congress, I probably don't know them because they're not on TV.
Yeah.
They're in their committees. They're working across party lines. They're trying to move the ball forward for their communities instead of just being so polarizing. I mean, I agree with you. America's fed up with that for sure.
I don't know how we set our priorities. And we're all to blame for this, all of us, because we have the ability to look at this direct mail piece and go, that's junk. I'm not going to buy into that. our ability to see through things. I don't understand like why we can't do math anymore in America. A million people have died of COVID in this country. 1 million people. And there's many strains in the Republican Party that I'm not going to go as far as to say that they just don't think COVID exists, but everything they can to be, this is where I'm drawing a line about what government can or can't do. 45,000 people last year lost their lives to gun violence. 45,000, 1 million. 100,000 people last year died of drug overdoses, two-thirds of those because of fentanyl and the lack of knowledge of, you know, one pill can kill you and not knowing. Mm-hmm. Why can't we prioritize like they would in a triage at a hospital about the numbers that we're dealing with instead of making it political?
Well, that sells, you know, and that gets you airtime. Is to be able to have those really intense feelings and those intense conversations. I mean, I hear numbers about all of those issues, and it's just disheartening. I mean, America feels so broken, and it's like an assault on all sides. You know, we've got COVID, we've got gun violence, we've got fentanyl. I mean, you just have so many things that are making it hard. And I feel like it's not that people aren't talking about those things. You know, out on the campaign trail. I mean, they're there in the polling and they're there.
But the COVID numbers and the opioid numbers are way down the list from crime and gun violence. There is a disproportionate attention paid to the 45,000 people that have been killed.
That was probably the opposite in the last 2 years, though. I mean, we had the COVID conversation running.
But I'm talking about every candidate that comes through, every direct mail piece I get, every ad I hear, I see where the hot points are. I've not heard one political ad talking about let's get rid of COVID and get vaccinations and get people. No one's touching that. I've not heard one ad about fentanyl overdoses. I've heard plenty of ads about Black Lives Matter and crime.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what's being pushed out. You're right. I mean, I think that there's probably some people that, you know, on the political campaign, you know, we read those polls too. Okay, what's not polling well? What's polling well? What's type of mind for people? And when you've got something like COVID that's at the bottom of the list, it's...
Well, it's not the bottom of the list. I'm just saying it's not as high as crime. And I don't understand. But I'm an odds person, right? I mean, in life. I mean, that's all you can do. Mm-hmm. You look at the numbers and you do, you know, if I work out and I get healthier, I might be better off health-wise and live longer than doing the opposite of that. When I look at a million people dead versus 45,000 people dead, I go, okay, one seems to be a way larger problem and I'm way more likely to be impacted by that than I am the other. Politics is the exact opposite. They're like, don't believe what's in front of you and actual true. Here's the thing you got to pay attention to.
Yeah, but when you're talking about people engaging in the COVID conversation still, I mean, I think our communities are still using all those tools, are still combating. I mean, I know three people that have COVID right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like it's going away. I mean, it's a virus that's going to continue to cycle through our communities.
Yeah, but we're sitting at a 50% vaccination rate in this county.
We are.
50%.
Well, and every effort seems to be being made to try and get that number up.
But why are half of the people who live here completely opposed to it?
Well, I think it probably is a number of factors. I mean, if I had to say some of the discussions I've heard about it, it's probably too fast of a rollout. People are wondering about the science behind it.
Wouldn't you trust the science of 2022 versus the science of 1950? But I guarantee you all your kids before they went to school got vaccinations.
Well, but I think what I'm hearing is people saying the roll to market was so fast. There was a lot of trials.
And how many of these people are in this as an industry or experts in vaccines or science? I mean, versus just...
Well, there were plenty of people pushing back against it. You know, they got silenced to some extent. But, you know, I think that's a factor. I think access is still a factor, although, I mean, I think I drive around this community.
I can go to Crossing today.
Yeah,
and
there's
get a vaccine.
Appointments, there's drive-thrus, yeah. There's et cetera. I mean, a lot of the language when vaccines first rolled out, of course, it was under the Trump administration. You know, many big names in the Democratic Party were against it because if it was Trump's rollout, they weren't touching it with a 10-foot pole. And so I think that messaging
if you
may have carried on. I mean, I'm just telling you what I'm hearing.
That's fine. I would tell you that the vice president was absolutely wrong in her words about not doing this if it was the Trump administration. The Trump administration wanted it both ways.
Talk about being political.
Take the credit for creating it and then tell people not to do it makes no sense to me at all. I mean,
that's the political game, though, too.
Yes,
that's the gamesmanship.
But COVID
you're playing with people's lives.
Care about politics.
I agree with you. like I said, you're playing with people's lives at that point.
All right. Why did you get involved? And I've been told this and looked at the things with this DeVore lawsuit. What was your thinking in this? And which lawsuit was it? Because he had, you know, dozens of them around the state.
So for me personally, my girls are in public school locally here, and we had our first year back in school with masks, and the school was doing, you know, what they could to stem the flow of you know, cases, if you will, in their buildings. And when we started this school year this fall in 2021, our school board was a mask optional policy, which I believed in the science. I didn't think the kids were the high-risk group. I was hearing lots of stories about kids that were close contact, out of school, boom, 10 days. And I didn't think that was the right position to take J.B. Pritzker's executive order and therefore become a mask mandatory school district. And I went to my school board meetings and I said my public comment and I listened for a discussion, which there wasn't a lot of. And I just didn't get the response that I wanted. I filed letters to my school board saying, hey, I have rights as a parent. You know, the masks are a medical device that really belongs with the decision by the health department. There's a lot of mixed messaging here. So my next logical step was honestly filing a lawsuit against my school district. Now, ironically, at the same time, Tom DeVore had opened up his parent lawsuit to families across the state. He had a small number of clients, I think it was two or three, that had filed a lawsuit and had been pushed back because they only named the governor in the lawsuit. And the judge said, you need to include the Illinois Department of Public Health, you need to include the State Board of Ed, and you need to include your local school district. So in doing all those things, he opened it up. And really, it was, for me, a logical situation. You know, it costs money to file a lawsuit. I thought it was interesting that my school district was worried that by having a mask mandate, they were going to protect themselves from a lawsuit from families that might be concerned about, you know, them not having a mandatory policy. Although when I stood at that very first meeting of about 20 families that spoke, three were for mask mandates and about 17 were for optional. And the vote, I think, was 6-1 mandatory. So there was a disconnect there. But I continued to have those conversations. I mean, I wasn't looking to place blame. I just knew that I was fighting for my rights. And so in joining that lawsuit, I found myself surrounded with like-minded people. It was never really about the masks. It was about the mandate.
Okay, but were you at all concerned about what the teachers thought or the sure. staff thought? Because it's not just, I mean, I agree with you that kids are at a low risk of physically, you mm-hmm. know, being ill or certainly dying. I mean, the numbers will prove that out. Mm-hmm. But they weren't just kids. I mean, they were in classrooms with adults that went sure. home to loved ones that were immunocompromised or mm-hmm. going through cancer treatments. I mean, could you not understand their side of this at all?
Oh, I absolutely understand their side, which is why mask optional would still allow them to wear masks. Most of the teachers had been vaccinated and taken their own steps to protect themselves. But we had seen the effects on the children that are just going to be for the next decade, probably. We've got suicide, we've got depression, we've got the ability to not know your sounds if you're in elementary school. And so the harm for our children was much greater than the potential risk for adults, okay. I felt, in the building.
We have an 18-year-old, you know, who's been through this last 2 years at Eisenhower High School, graduating on Saturday. So I've been there with you as far as being a parent, mm-hmm. you know, with kids going through this. I never felt his right to feel important was more important than the other rights that people had to their health. We can agree to disagree with that. Okay. But when you stand up and you say that, do you not see any irony that you're going to come out and say that the Supreme Court, and then by extension of the Supreme Court, the states will have the ability to, you know, we're stepping too far with telling you to wear a mask, but we're going to say you can't have an abortion. And in some Republicans' opinions, even if you've been raped or the victim of incest in your family. I mean, how do you reconcile that in your head, because it seems so disconnected to me?
Well, for me personally, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, we should get on the record, is not making abortion illegal. So it's not telling you that you can't have an abortion.
Yeah, but you know that's what we're...
No, that's like full stop, because that's a lot of the argument that's coming out of those who are marching and rallying.
Well,
now, here's the thing.
Look at some of the states and what they're doing. And if Roe v. Wade turns it back to the states, you're going to have more of that.
Well, sure. But you know what? That's how this constitutional republic works. When you elect leaders, there are consequences. And if they don't have the same opinion as you, you're going to have to face those. I live in Illinois. I'm not pleased with a large percentage of the, you know, legislation that's coming out, whether that's, you know, we're a we're an extreme on the abortion issue. I mean, it's legal here, and Pritzker is going to fight like hell to keep it.
If more people feel the way you do, why can't Republicans get elected in Illinois? I mean, this is the disconnect, I think, with the Republican Party sometimes. And we're running out of time. Nick, I apologize we're late here. But this is an actual... We have already rolled over. This is a conversation I wish more people would have just about the issues. If what you believe is popular, or you believe the majority of people believe this, why is it that we are... The Republican Party in the state of Illinois is a super minority that has the inability... They can't get anything done.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know. I'll be interested to see this year what happens, because there are a lot more people coming out. I mean, Republicans in general try to be the compromisers. I mean, I've seen a lot more of them fight like hell. You know, like I said, it's been interesting joining the political climate, and, you know, it's the Republicans to win this year unless they screw it up. So to your point, they have a really good track record of not being able to get their message across the finish line. And so I think it's, you know, candidates like me that people are looking for that's saying, let's have this conversation. Let's talk this out. Let's bring the right people to the table. It's not quite as black and white as you feel, but elections do have consequences. So in Illinois, as far as the, you know, the pro-choice, pro-life argument, I mean, we have a state that is allowing you to have an abortion all the way up to 9 months. And I know that 80% of the population are just not a fan of that.
No, but 64% of the population is not in favor of overturning Roe v. Wade. So there's nuance in this conversation. And this is where the political parties always screw this up, both sides. It's like 0 to 60, and there's never anybody driving 30.
But the people polling, I don't feel like know the actual facts. As I mentioned before, overturning of Roe v. Wade is based on a constitutional right to an abortion, which I don't think is there. So returning it to the states allows your elected officials by the people to make a choice for you. So guess what? In my district, down in Fairview Heights, Planned Parenthood has gotten together with a health center, and they are making basically an oasis for access to abortions, because Illinois is an island. So state that we touch is going to be more restrictive.
And how does this position that you clearly stand by, how does it play in Champaign?
What do you mean, how does it play in
Champaign? Well, I mean, it's part of your congressional district, which is the office you're running for is a lean Democrat district.
Sure.
You know, the University of Illinois in Champaign
County is for sure one of my strongest Democratic-leaning counties.
Right. So when you go there, how does this message play? And aren't they what's important to you?
They are. And I'm having those conversations, too. But for me, having those conversations is breaking it down like you and I.
All right. Fair enough. Listen, we're out of time. And I'm not trying to cut you off. We're already, I gave you 8 extra minutes.
Hey, thanks.
I'm just doing that so that the other person can demand their 8 extra
congressional
minutes.
Candidate.
How do people
early
find
voting
you online?
Starts tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow or is it next week? I thought it was
the
next
19th?
Week. It's the 19th. All right. So early voting is website Reagan4Congress.com.
That's me.
And that's Regan. I'm sorry. R-E-G-A-N. I always screw that up. Because we have
an okay affiliation
board
by
member.
Me.
I would imagine so. you can find out her issues online.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.